Here is a complex problem par excellence. A pandemic disease is ravaging Africa. A technical solution exists to transform the disease from a killer to a manageable condition. Yet that solution is utterly beyond reach of those who need it. The injustice was immediately stark, but the solutions less so. The first breakthrough came when some generic drug producers, notably in India, reverse-engineered the medicines and announced that they could produce the drug cocktails at a tiny fraction of the market price. Of course, so too could the patent-holding pharmaceutical companies, who were reaping high prices for the medicines only by virtue of their patent protection and the temporary monopoly that the patents provided. In 2000 and 2001, several generics companies announced that they would provide the medicines to low-income countries at about $1 per day per patient for the drug cocktail, that is, roughly $350 per year. The major patent-holding companies confirmed that they, too, could produce at such a low cost, but they argued that the lower cost would not recoup the preceding R&D, and even worse, would adversely affect their incentives for future R&D. Through heated discussions and vociferous debate, the multiple stakeholders in this crisis, including the World Health Organization, the patent-holding pharmaceutical companies, various groups representing HIV-infected individuals, academic groups, and African governments, came to several realizations. First, they realized, with varying time lags, that the patent-holding pharmaceutical companies could afford to sell their antiretroviral medicines at production cost in Africa, that is, at $350 or so per year, while maintaining their patent-protected margins in the rich countries, that is, at $10,000 per year. This would not lose money, even potential revenues, since the patent-holding companies, in any event, had no real market in Africa at a price of $10,000. Moreover, it would be possible, through normal policing, to segment the African markets from the high-income markets. The drugs destined for Africa could not legally be sent back across the borders of the rich countries, and effective policing could realistically be put in place, as has proven to be the case. Second, even when the drugs were offered at marginal production cost, the African countries, governments, and households could not afford them. Health budgets in these countries are roughly $10 per person per year or less, and cannot cover drugs that cost hundreds of dollars per year. Therefore, donors would be required to buy the drugs at reduced prices on behalf of African patients and then provide them in Africa for free, or at prices that are a tiny fraction of the $350 per patient per year. This is one of the reasons for establishing the new Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. Yet the parties to the emerging strategy then faced a third set of obstacles. Even when the drugs got to the warehouses in Africa, they were hard to move to the patients. The last mile of the supply chain, from the drug inventories to the dying patients in huts in rural villages, could not be bridged through automatic market forces. The challenges of scaling up basic health services, including public education, counseling and testing, medical care, and patient oversight, and drug logistics to transport medicines from regional health centers and hospitals to local villages, are all part of the daunting challenges. At the end of the supply chain is an impoverished household that cannot afford to cover even a pittance of the costs. Actually, even this description is too simple. Some drug companies, for example, Bristol-Myers Squibb, BMS, launched wonderful philanthropic programs of HIV drug delivery, supporting their own teams or independent NGOs in the medical supply chain and delivery. But they then discovered yet another obstacle facing the poorest of the poor. Many lacked the means even for a minimum of daily caloric intake, and the HIV medicines don't function well with a chronically undernourished patient. A group of project leaders from BMS at one point came to my office for advice on how they might grow food in their HIV project site. Actually, by 2007, many of these problems have been recognized and are being addressed on a large scale. Roughly 1 million Africans are now on HIV treatment supported by donor funding, compared with almost none in the year 2000. Each of the multiple stakeholders is performing a piece of the magic. Markets are not the drivers of this success, though of course market returns help to make available the medicines in the first place and help to generate the income in the high-income world needed to finance access to antiretrovirals for the poorest of the poor. The actual institutions delivering AIDS medicines include a bewildering array of market-based, public sector, and not-for-profit non-governmental actors, including the drug companies, NGOs such as Partners in Health and Doctors Without Borders, the Global Fund, national African governments, local communities, and volunteer village health workers. The common thread is not market returns, but rather commitment to a common goal: AIDS treatment for all who need it, even the poorest of the poor.